Well, hello there. Hi, how are you? Welcome to Jim on the Air, my podcast here on many platforms, actually. I'm very excited. The host platform that hosts my show is Anchor.fm, and I just found out recently that my show, Jim on the Air, is on 6 different platforms now, and if you wanted to look for them, or look for my show on different podcast platforms that you use. First of all, the show is available on Anchor.fm, Jim on the Air. It's also available on Breaker, Google Podcasts, although there was a technical glitch with that earlier. But anyway, Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, and Spotify. So if you use any of those platforms to listen to podcasts, you should be able to find my show, Jim on the Air, on those platforms. I'm very excited to have the show move on to other platforms. Again, they are Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, that's 2 words, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, and Spotify. And you can find my show on any of those platforms, and hopefully we'll be adding some other platforms very, very soon. So yeah, I'm getting excited here about the podcast moving forward. And in this particular episode, this is episode number 13 now. On this particular episode, I have an interview with Terry Ball. Terry is the executive director of Center Stage Theater, and we talk about a lot of current events surrounding live performance as it relates to the pandemic and opening up various venues. Here in California, a lot of entertainment venues have been kind of frustrated with the state of California because they've had no guidelines for opening in inside theaters. Restaurants can open, and there's outdoor venues, of course, have guidelines, but there haven't been any guidelines for inside venues until just recently. And so we talk about that on this week's podcast, and we'll get right to it here. You can listen to the conversation with Terry and I right after we take a small, tiny little break. Just a tiny, itty-bitty little break. Just a short, quick break, and then I'll be back with my interview with Terry Ball from Center Stage Theater. Thanks for listening. Hi, and welcome to Jim on the Air. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I'm very excited to continue doing episodes and interviewing folks. I interviewed 2 of the technical directors at Center Stage Theater, and now I have the Queen Bee of Center Stage Theater, the executive director for Center Stage, Terry Ball, and she's joining us on the podcast to talk about several different things. The reopening guidelines that have just come out a few days ago, or maybe just a minute ago, depending on when you're listening to this. And then we'll also talk about some other fabulous events that are coming up for Center Stage. And welcome to Jim on the Air, Terry Ball. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure. And that will now become my permanent new title. I am forever now going to be Queen Bee Terry Ball, as opposed to executive director. Seems a lot more fun. Yeah. I'm having shows made, I've decided.
Okay, good. I think you should stick with that too, because it'd be definitely more fun. So just the other day, Terry, I guess the state of California established new guidelines for indoor venues. Tell us what you've learned.
Well, we have some information on the indoor guidelines. We don't have all of the information. They're following the same pattern that they followed a few weeks ago with guidelines for outdoor performance. What a lot of people may not realize is up until April 1st, there were no performances that were actually allowed. You could not perform indoors, outdoors, at all in the state. And as of April 1st, they put out guidelines for outdoor performances. And like with this time, they first released sort of a chart and gave big broad stroke things. And then a couple of days before the guidelines went into effect, they came out with the detailed guidelines. So what happened yesterday was, the release of kind of the chart that gives us the roadmap for indoor guidelines. So the big things to know are that as of April 15th, We will, for the first time in more than a year now, be allowed to have indoor performances with live audiences. When it first starts in the red zone, or the red tier, which is what Santa Barbara currently is in, it is limited to 10% of your capacity or 100 people, whichever is the smaller. So like at Center Stage, you're talking 13 people. At the Libero, you're talking 68, which is because their seating is 680. So you're talking 68. If you went on to like the Granada, which has more than 1,000 seats, then they'd be capped at 100 people. The interesting thing they've done with these guidelines, though, is if all of your guests are have either tested negative in, I think it's the last 72 hours, that detail isn't out yet, or have proof that they're fully vaccinated, then that goes up to 25%. So that would mean for Center Stage, AirMath not being my friend, you're more in the range of, let's see, 13 twice, 26, you know, in the 30 range.
30 people.
30 people would be allowed. If everybody that is attending in the audience and the performers and staff and everything are all fully vaccinated or have tested positive in the last 3 days.
Okay, so have tested or have not tested?
They have tested negative, sorry.
Negative.
I cannot get my brain wrapped around this is a test that you want to fail.
That's right.
But the good news is that you're negative. So yeah, they are incentivizing and accepting the science of once you're vaccinated, once, you know, if you've tested negative, that we can allow more people inside.
So, okay, so, but the way it is currently, though, it would be 25%? What was the percentage?
I mean, currently today, you can do nothing.
Right.
But as of April 15th, if you don't worry about the testing and the vaccination, then it's 10%. And okay. For Center Stage, because of our capacity, that's 13 people.
Oh, because because you have 130 seats?
Yes.
Wow, so you could only have 13 people in the audience?
Yes.
Oh, my
yeah,
goodness.
Now, what hasn't been released yet, because, like I say, this is just the sort of framework, it hasn't given additional details, like in the outdoor guidelines, if all of the performers and backstage people are tested, I can't remember, it's either once a week or twice a week, but if they're being regularly tested, then you don't have to include them in your capacity.
Okay.
If they aren't, then your 13 people has to include your audience and staff and performers.
Oh.
For us. But as long as, like, because Center Stage right now is certified to open to do video production. We can have performers come in and videotape them. But one of the guidelines for that is all of our staff has to be tested on a regular basis.
Either
weekly,
one.
Sometimes twice weekly, depending upon what's going on.
Wow.
Yeah, so we would automatically do that. And the people that come in to videotape, we already require that they're tested. So in our case, as long as the guidelines that are released for indoor stay consistent with the detail of the guidelines for outdoor, I anticipate that it will be that the 10% or 25% capacity will be talking audience, because we'll make sure everybody else is tested.
Is tested, right. But okay, so as long as you're testing the performers and your staff on a regular basis, then the 10% would be the 13 people in the audience. Is that
yes?
Saying that correct?
Yeah. Then, okay. Then the capacity would be 13, or if we go with tested and positive audience, then we'd be up to a rollicking 32.
32, but then
I mean, technically, we could add a little bit above that. The boring technicalities, the fire capacity for the theater is actually 200. In our current seating configuration, it's our capacity is 130. So if we did things like add seats on the floor, you know, there are ways while maintaining a 6-foot distance that we could probably add a couple more.
A couple more seats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But my anticipation would be, and you know, then you get into the sticky question that everybody's going down right now of civil liberties versus higher capacity. You know, it's a real sensitivity in terms of telling people they have to prove vaccination and or testing. And yet scientifically it makes perfect sense. You know, you're safer putting people in the theater if you know one of those two things is true.
Right.
So I'm sure that's going to be a big conversation for months to come.
You know,
this whole issue of proving it, because it, and it's interesting that is a requirement that is being put on theater, but is not a component in restaurants, houses of worship.
Right.
You know, when you go to the restaurant, the capacity isn't different, whether, you know, nobody's asking if you're tested or not.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah, but for some reason, a performing arts venue has to have all that proof.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, because before we went on, we were talking about the restaurants that we've gone to, and all they do is they ask you indoors or outdoors.
Yeah.
And they, you know, you don't have to prove anything. And, you know, that's a really good point. Where are you, though, with all of this, you know, with the guidelines that are just kind of barely sort of squeaking open the door, just barely, it sounds like. Where are you as far as what you anticipate for Center Stage?
You know, it's hard to know. And because we've been asking the state for these guidelines, and then, you know, they just came out. I was actually in a meeting yesterday where we thought the point of the meeting was to go over the outdoor guidelines with the state organization that issues all of these guidelines. And during the meeting is when we learned that later that day, they were also going to release the indoor guidelines. My anticipation is that the rest of 2021 is going to be a hybrid, a combo platter. You know, both the state and federal are very fond of saying it's a dimmer switch. So I think we will go through a phase of being able to have small audiences that over the coming months, as more and more people get vaccinated, as the science becomes more and more established about the impact of the vaccines, that we will move through smaller to larger audiences. And it will be a decision for individual producers. Do you want to augment that with some of the video options that currently exist? You know, right now, and we've been doing a lot of this at the theater, right now you can come in and videotape a performance. And really you have two choices. You can live stream that performance while it's actually happening, or you can videotape it. And I guess it's not tape anymore, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, record it, yeah.
And then edit it and put it up as video on demand.
On your website. Think,
yeah, you know, and people have different approaches to this. You know, some people are putting things up and selling a ticket, but at varying levels, because everybody's trying to raise money. And other people are putting up videos for free and asking for donations. So it, you know, it's kind of all over the place. And that's a whole conversation in and of itself that people are having. One of the things that is very true in the performing arts, and for those of us who are hardcore, long time, definite performing arts people, there's a difference between video of a performance and being at a live performance.
Right.
There's a difference between, you know, film, television, and theater are three different animals.
Yeah.
And we have all seen the very bad experience of watching a videotape of a live performance when that videotape is the camera sitting at the back of the theater with one wide shot.
Right.
It's great if what you're watching is, you know, your grandkids' show that you couldn't go to, or, right, you know, something that I absolutely couldn't go to and I really, really need to see this. Okay, fine. But it is by no means the same experience as being in the theater.
Yeah. Well, and like we were talking, I was interviewing Kai and Antonio, who, you know, work for you at Center Stage, and we were saying pretty much the same thing. It's just not the same as performing, you know, like when you're rehearsing a show and you're going through it, it's one thing versus the performance. You don't have the audience clapping or laughing or gasping or interacting with you or shedding a tear, whatever it is. You don't have that experience. And even though you might do a performance with a live stream, it's still, there's no audience there. You don't know who's really watching.
Yeah, and there aren't the, you know, I personally think, though there is something about that, and I think actors and directors really love that feeling of it's live, even if you're doing it on camera. I think the most effective bridge that has been found right now for, I can't have a live audience, I can't have a full performance, but I want to share this theatrical experience, is the events that are recorded and then edited and offered. Because then you can have multiple camera angles and you can, you know, edit things and you can offer some angles and some pieces to the experience that you can't have when you're sitting live in the audience. And right. So I think it captures the experience more fully. Now, you could do all of that with live stream, you know, with multiple angles and all of that, but you basically need to be in a TV studio, you know,
right,
in order to do that. And that's not, in order for Center Stage to be able to really do that and do it really effectively, we'd have to spend tens of thousands of dollars and have a whole lot of staff.
Right.
Because of what it requires. The interesting thing that, you know, we've learned so much. I'm a live theater person, but we've learned so much about video and live stream over the course of the last year because it's all we could do. But one of the things that I already knew that lighting was different. The light, you know, 30 years being married to a lighting designer teaches you a few things. And one of them is the way that you set the lights and the way you want the lights to look for a live theater production is very different than a video production. If you just videotape and use the lights that are set for a theater piece, it's almost always much darker than you want it to be.
Right.
You know, it's a different animal.
When the colors look different and on video versus live.
Yeah, the video experience is very different than the live experience. Well, the same is true with sound. And if you're going to live stream a live event, then you in essence need two complete sound systems. One for the people who are, if you're gonna live stream a live event with an audience, if you don't care about the experience in the theater, then you're in a different animal.
When you're you're saying like a live stream where the audience is only watching online from home.
Right.
No audience in the theater, okay.
Right. In that case, it's a little more straightforward. But if you are live streaming an event and you've got an audience in the theater and an audience at home, which we've all seen on television, but what we don't realize is there are two complete separate audio systems and camera systems and those kinds of things. You know, if you're watching a football game on television, which is in essence, you know, an old live stream, the PA system that you're hearing on television is not what the spectators are listening to.
Right.
And vice versa. They're not getting what you're getting. And there's a reason for that. And so if we're going to live stream a live performance with an audience, then we in essence need two complete sets of audio equipment and really two different staffs
yeah,
operating them.
Right.
Which is really difficult at our level. So, you know, there was a lot of talk, particularly, you know, last March when this all first started, that what will happen is we'll just have these partial audiences and then you'll live stream and everybody will have this giant audience because you'll have the 25 people you can have in the theater and then the entire world is your audience.
Live stream, yeah.
Live streaming. But reality, as is so often the case, is not quite that simple. And another reality is creating video of performance and live streaming performance isn't really that much cheaper than doing a live production. But if you have, you know, if you want to have the correct equipment, if you want to have the correct staff, if you want to have the level of internet, you know, to hopefully somewhat behave. So it's a really long way of saying, I don't know. One of the things I'm doing right now is polling our renters because, you know, Center Stage in normal times that are non-pandemic, we don't do a lot of producing. We have renters that come in and we help them. And that's what decides what performs at Center Stage. We don't, unlike the ensemble, we don't, you know, have a season and these are the five shows we're gonna do. So part of what I'm doing is reaching out to our renters to say, what do you wanna do? Do you not wanna produce until you can have a full audience? Do you want to come in and video things that can be offered live stream or video on demand? Do you want to do a hybrid? And as with most things, we're getting answers across the board. You know, there are some people that have said to me, I'm not coming close to it until I can be back with a full audience. You know, not unlike Broadway. You know, New York is to the point right now that they're starting to reopen some things. You can have performances in New York at this point indoors with like 33% capacity, I believe. But Broadway theaters aren't talking about reopening until the fall because you can't afford to run a Broadway show on a 1/3 house.
Right.
You know, that financially it just doesn't work. And when you're talking about live shows, you also have a whole different set of considerations for rights. And what the actors union is really willing to let you do, and what the, you know, what the playwrights and all those rights are a really different consideration for, you know, video and live stream versus performance. So the short answer is, like with everything else in COVID, we'll figure it out as we go. I'm looking at what our options are. We have definitely upgraded so that we can video things. We did a great project at the end of January with Westmont Opera. We didn't video it, they did, but they came in, they rehearsed for a week and produced a beautiful opera video. And we had full COVID compliance. And though there was an orchestra and a full opera, there was not a single case of COVID that came out of the production. And we have done other videos like that, which have been really helpful to us in learning the process. What do we have to do? What are the written guidelines? And what then else do you need to do to keep everybody comfortable?
Right.
Because this is all evolving.
Yeah, now, it's a huge, like, Tetris puzzle or any kind of puzzle. You know what I mean? It's like you have, or the juggling of the balls in the air. There's like so many pieces that have to, and moving parts, you know, figuratively as well as literally, that you have to have come together. It's sounds like that maybe, you know, at least for Center Stage, you may just continue doing online with some.
Yeah, I think that there will be more groups that are more comfortable now coming in to videotape. I do think there will be some that want to perform with the small audience regardless.
Even if it's only 13 people.
Even if it's only 13 people. And I think that we will probably shoot for the 25%. I think we will say to people, you know, or depending upon producers, you could conceivably have two different performances. And if you want to come to the performance that is the 13, you know, and producers could even charge more. You know, if you want to come to the performance that you don't have to prove those things, then people could offer that opportunity and have the, you know, the 10% capacity and have that performance. And you could also offer the performance that is, okay, so that we can have 25% capacity, we're going to ask people to show that they've been vaccinated or have tested negative.
Right.
You know, there may be people who choose to do both. We'll figure it out. You know, one of the biggest challenges with COVID is not only are you juggling balls, but as you're juggling them, first they're balls, then they're squares, then they're, you know,
it's not just balls. Right, right. And now it's, or what is it, the flaming torches.
Flaming, exactly, torches.
Like, oh, now it's a,
for example, with the vaccines, when the vaccines first came out and the efficacy rates they were talking about with the vaccines, one of the things that was less talked about was they didn't know. They knew with those vaccines that it didn't make people sick, you know, seriously ill. The people that were in those vaccine trials were not getting symptoms. They weren't getting, you know, really seriously ill. They weren't ending up in the hospital. What they were not testing at that point was whether or not they were actually getting the disease, which is why the early information has been just because, you know, when the vaccines were first happening, it was still, you have to be really careful. You could still be spreading the disease. Well, now we're a few months into these vaccines, and so they're continuing these trials, and now what they're finding is that happily, not only are they working to keep people from getting really sick, but they also are keeping people from getting the virus. So if you have been vaccinated, you are much less likely to spread the disease. You are much less likely to get it and spread it, which is why, you know, several months in now, the CDC and the state are starting to expand things that you can do once you're vaccinated. As opposed to at the very beginning, it was, yes, please get vaccinated, but you can't really change any of your behaviors. And they are finding with more and more studies that not only is it keeping people from getting sick, but it's also keeping people from getting the virus and being able to spread the virus.
Wow.
So, you know, the information continues to evolve.
Right.
And the guidelines continue to evolve. And what we have found in terms of one of the things we've spent a lot of time doing this past year, once we were certified to do videos, is bringing people in and doing them. You know, in some cases it was groups renting the theater to come in and do their videotapes. In other cases, we've reached out to people and said, come film your video and then we'll do it as a joint fundraiser.
Right.
You know, so they feel comfortable because they don't have the financial risk that they would normally. And it gives us the opportunity to create a performance chance, you know, for some artists in town and test these guidelines. You know, this is what the state is telling you. And this is what, you know, our industry guidance is. But does that make people comfortable? And we're going to have to do the same thing with audiences. There are the minimum things that the scientists can tell us, this is what you need to do, you know, to keep people safe. But then these are human beings. And so you have to figure out not just what, you know, the CDC and the state says is safe for a bunch of opera singers or a bunch of dancers, but you have to then have actual humans come in and say to them, what makes you feel safe? is there anything that's going on here that, though the science may say we're doing enough, do you feel safe? Do you feel comfortable coming back in? I mean, one of the interesting things that I have found in COVID is the response to it is very, very personal. And I kind of assumed going in that it would be young, healthy people will feel very cavalier about this.
Right.
People with, you know, compromised immune systems, older people will be much more cautious. And I could not have been more wrong. I was wrongy McWrongs a lot, because some of the people who are the most cautious and the most concerned and who have been the sort of most diligent that I know are 20-year-olds, you know, who have been, and some of the, you know, much more brazen, you know, are 85-year-olds. It's very interesting, you know, that people's response to it and people's comfort level.
Yeah. And then how do you accommodate people who have so many varying degrees of comfort levels?
Yeah.
People who don't want to go to the theater at all until the pandemic is completely over. People who are, well, I'm okay. As you said, people who are, you know, kind of cavalier about it as well. And how do you accommodate performers and audience all with all these varying degrees of comfort levels?
Which is what we're learning.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, when this all started last March, as a theater, you know, the board and I sat down and there were really two choices. We could close the doors, lay the staff off, and wait. You know, have the little bit of money that we had and just say, okay, when it's all over, we'll come back out. But as a theater that is here specifically to serve the community, my feeling was that does nothing to serve the community. So we've spent a year figuring out what at this stage we can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we started out with, you know, all Zoom interviews, and, you know, our digital arts festival started with, you know, the interview
just
a
year ago. Yeah, that was already a year ago.
It was. Can you believe it?
No.
And we've just continued to evolve. We don't normally produce events, but right now nobody is, and there was no income coming in. So we thought, what are the kinds of things we can produce? And we've done, as I said, a variety of things. Right now, for a couple more days, we have a wonderful dance video up with a group called Dance with Harut, lots of sort of burlesque, wonderful, empowering fun. The next one I'm about to put up, we actually filmed it last fall, and it's for a variety of reasons took us a while, but it's some wonderful young dancers from Goethe School of Ballet, each doing a solo. This was filmed very early on, so we had one dancer at a time in the space with all full COVID protocols. And we're about to do a digital dance festival.
Which is a great segue, because I was just about to ask you about the open submissions.
That?
Yes, that
you
was
like that?
Fabulous.
You know, which is interesting, because I have to tell you, last weekend, I was working with the folks who are collaborating with us on this. Brandon Whitehead, who is a dance faculty at UCSB and a wonderful dancer and choreographer, is acting as our artistic director. We're doing this in collaboration with New and Reimagined Works out of UCSB. And we were, you know, finalizing the dance notice, the call for submissions to go out, that was supposed to go out Friday, when these new guidelines came out. But we spent last weekend talking about, okay, well, we don't have any guidelines yet. This is probably going to have to be all digital, and set it up very much anticipating, you know, all digital. And now the question is, where will we go over the next couple of months?
Right.
And so how much audience will be? And it's, you know, it's going to be a sliding scale, and we're going to see. But what we're doing is we're going to put out a call for submissions. And you don't even have to be here in Santa Barbara, because the anticipation is that the final product will be a digital experience. So if you are away, you can submit a digital performance. Mm-hmm. If you are so inclined and are local, and submit and are selected, then we're going to offer people the opportunity to come into the theater and record their performance, so that that would then be added to the digital mix. And we're going to call for submissions in a few different categories, and then put together, based on what comes in, three or four different bills. So there might be, so we're going to have it like a student category. We're going to have a long form category and a shorter form category. What I want is as wide submissions as possible. The thing that I think Center Stage does well, and that I think we can do right now, is offer people the opportunity to perform. That's not in your living room. But right. So many artists have not had that outlet for the last year.
Right. And as an opportunity to perform anywhere.
Yeah.
Other than the living room. Yeah, at all. Yeah.
And their income has been drastically impacted. So just because, you know, one of the arguments we've made about guidelines is, just because you open the guidelines up today doesn't mean performance can start tomorrow. You know, if I'm a restaurant and there's a change, I have to hire people and get up to speed.
Yeah.
But, you know, for live performances take weeks, sometimes months, to plan and put together.
Right.
So, you know, when 2 weeks ago we had no idea when guidelines were coming, and then really 3 days ago we, you know, had nothing more than soon, you know, just because guidelines are going to be able to be opened on the 15th, people aren't necessarily going to have anything ready to go.
Right. Yeah.
Because, and there are, you know, you have to figure out these confusing financial, what can I afford to do?
Right.
You know, with these parameters. But anyway, so for the dance festival, where I want all genres. I want, you know, you don't feel welcome. You didn't feel, I want anybody who's ever felt other. You know, I want us to combine. This has been a tough year, and it's been a year not only really hard because of COVID, but we've spent a lot of time over the course of the year realizing how many people and how many artists in our society still feel excluded. You know, I think the arts have a tendency to see themselves as very welcoming. And unfortunately, what has become very, very true over the course of the last year is what a facade that is. And how many people within the arts in general and the performing arts still feel, you know, trans and binary and BIPOC artists and even women, you know, still are, if you look at the numbers, horribly, horribly underrepresented. And I want this to be an opportunity for us to work at combating some of that. Nice. I want there to be different categories so everybody feels there's a point of entry for them. It's not just ballet and modern, you know, is it hip hop? Is it traditional dance? Is it some traditional cultural dance? Is it maybe ballroom? It could be ballroom, could be drag, could be, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever, yeah.
And then Brandon will work to curate and pull together, you know, and instead of saying, okay, we're going to have a night of this and a night of this and a night of this, we want to say, send us what you got. And then we'll look at, you know, the wonderful, diverse mix that we have and put together the programs based on that, you know, and not necessarily a program of all the students will be together and all the shorts will be together. But maybe there's a night with, you know, three students, one's hip hop, one's ballet, you know, and one's Middle Eastern, you know, mixed in with a professional dancer who submitted from New York and, you know, three UCSB alums. So
it could be a whole wide variety of different types of cultures, and as you're saying, you know, different personality types and different dance genres. What a wonderful event to just really show everybody what is possible in the world of dance.
Yeah, and I think we'll have, like I say, eclectic offerings. You know, we'll have, and if our goal is. On Monday, I'll send out the call for submissions on Monday, April. What is Monday the 6th? Yes. And we'll accept submissions until, is that right? No, Monday's the 5th.
The 5th.
Sunday's the 4th.
Tomorrow's the 4th. And then so is spring this Monday, the 5th.
Yeah. So we'll, you know, put out the call for submissions. We'll have a deadline in early May. And then we'll take May and June to those people that are selected that are, you know, within the travel time to Santa Barbara want to come, or our Santa Barbara locals, will take that time to film their pieces in the theater and edit and put them together. And then in mid-June, we'll have, whether it's three or four, one of the things that we have found is a nice hybrid when we have one of these digital offerings is to do a live stream premiere. So on the day that the video debuts, we do a live stream that sort of welcomes everybody. You have that fun sort of energy and excitement. And then you show the video, and then do a post show live, you know, on a Zoom chat of some sort with the artists. And that's the goal. Is that we'll have, you know, three or four of those in mid-June. The decisions we'll be making this weekend are, if it looks like by mid-June we could have an audience of 50, what then do we do? Do we do those three nights are a performance at the theater with an audience of 50, and we just show the video? Maybe it's a mixture, and we've got video and live performance going on at the same time. So that's what we're figuring out this weekend, now that life has changed again.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm glad you're on the show to explain all this to folks, because you know, everybody out there doesn't really, I don't think, realizes, you know, well, first of all, just under normal circumstances, what goes into putting a production together under normal circumstances. But then now with the pandemic, it's, you know, as we were saying before, it's juggling, it's a lot of moving parts, and it's you know, how do you figure this all out? And kudos to you guys for trying to figure it out, as opposed to other venues who are like, nope, we're just going to shut down until this all ends. But it's a lot.
It is an interesting conundrum, and it has been. And I have to say, I've never spent so much time in the 30 years I've been doing this, feeling like I have no idea what to do. Whatever you do, you end up later feeling like, well, that was the wrong thing. And it's been a really good lesson in just embracing, you have to stay as educated as possible. You have to make the best decision that you can at the moment. And then, know that times are going to change, and then a different decision is going to become right.
Right.
Because it's all changing. Everybody is so exhausted.
Yeah.
And so overwhelmed. You know, we're trying, my goal is to try to keep the theater alive. So we're here to welcome people back, to keep my staff employed, so we don't add to the problem.
Right.
You offer opportunities to local artists, because I know the ache that they're feeling of being not able to perform, and to try to raise as much money as we can, being cognizant of the fact that everyone in town is trying to raise as much money as they can. And yeah. all of us, our individuals, are being hit up every day
yeah.
by everything. So right. trying to, you know, chase every opportunity, every federal, state, local program that there is, but trying to avoid the temptation to every day be saying to our donors and supporters, give us money, give us money. Because yeah. I know they're getting that from everyone.
From all angles, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Terry, we're just about out of time. I wish we could, I could talk more about the theater and what we're, you know, what we're trying to do, but we're just about out of time. But before before I let you go, give us the, you know, just the 411 on the dance festival, what you have now for people to learn about at this point. You know,
well, it everything should go up live in a public setting on Monday, April 5th. The 411 is that we will be accepting dance submissions from, they can be single dancers, they could be full dancers. And then we are looking at the festival itself going live the middle of June. See if I flip over to a calendar, because I should have had these dates with me. This is how things continue to evolve in the time of COVID.
Yeah.
Come on, computer. So June 17th through the 20th.
Will be the
debut festival. And hopefully, okay. you know, the best thing that people can do is follow us on social media. It's Center Stage Theater SB. We were on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And on our website, centerstagetheater.org, we have a blog where, for one, you can go back and see all the past Digital Arts Festival interviews and blog posts about all the wonderful artists. There's more than 30 there. But mm-hmm. but that's all. I will post information about the dance festival there. And the evolving changes that will be true for Center Stage over the next month. The blog will be a place where we will try to communicate with our audience. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what the safety procedures are. Here's, you know, what makes you feel comfortable, what doesn't. So our blog posts and our social media and being on our email list that you can register for on our website is a great place to keep in touch with us, because what COVID has taught us is whatever we think is going to happen isn't. And the plans are going to change. So right. stay in touch with our social media and we can keep you up to date.
And everyone just kind of roll with the tide.
Roll with the tide. Yeah. yeah. I was listening to a great webinar at one point on doing online theater. And one of the things that the woman said at one point is, what you have to learn is grace. You have to have grace around the internet. You have to have grace around, because you know, you can have the most expensive internet in the world. You can have the best camera in the world. I mean, computer, you know, highest strength. And when the internet decides your thing isn't going to happen, the internet decides. And yeah. and it is yeah. all powerful. And you just have to realize everybody's equipment is different and there are glitches. And you just have to have grace and realize right. we're all doing the best we can. Yeah. Everybody is overstretched and overwhelmed. And roll with it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us on the show. And once again, the website, Center Stage Theater, and theater spelled E-R or R-E?
E-R. E-R.
Yeah, so Center Stage Theater, E-R spelling on theater, centerstagetheater.org. And of course, they're on all the social medias, all the interwebs, on Facebook and on Instagram. And I think we need to keep the title of Queen Bee.
I think so.
I think that's a good title.
And I think we should do this again, you know, in June and see where we've gone as opposed to what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like, you know, I have to kind of talk to all the theater groups, including Center Stage, and see where they are as well. But yeah, because it's changing so frequently.
Yeah.
A month from now, it could be completely different. So. Or a week.
Yeah, it really is. If you look back to where we were, you know, the end of February,
yeah.
it's changed so much. And hopefully things will start to change for the better, because right now the numbers are not going in the right direction locally.
Right,
so
yeah.
everybody, get vaccinated, get tested a lot, and wear your masks.
And wear your mask and social distance.
Yeah, the last 5 days, the numbers are not going in the right direction, unfortunately.
No, they're not. I've noticed that too. But hopefully, you know, fingers crossed that we continue to carry on, and hopefully we'll come out of this soon.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know about soon. Or just come out of it. I don't know if it's going to be soon, but maybe just that we make it through the tunnel at the light.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Terry, thank you again for joining us and continued keeping on over there at Center Stage. And once again, if you missed it, if you were grabbing your pen, the website, centerstagetheater.org. That's centerstagetheater.org, and theater spelled E-R, centerstagetheater.org. Terry, thank you so much for joining us. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.